On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery welcomes Susan Salka, CEO, President, and Director of AMN Healthcare, the nation's largest healthcare staffing firm. Susan shares highlights of her 30-plus year career at AMN, what makes healthcare staffing unique, and how the organization has innovated and shifted amid the pressures of COVID-19. Leslie and Susan also discuss how she found her competitive edge and drive to rise to the top, and what being a working parent means to her. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Susan Salka to the Edge Podcast. Currently CEO, President, and Director for AMN Healthcare, where she's spent the past 30-plus years. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks so much, Leslie. It is an honor and exciting to be with you on the podcast. So thank you for the invitation. I'm truly honored.
Oh my gosh, of course. I've heard so many wonderful things about you. So it's been great to get to know you, and you have a story worth sharing. So let's go ahead and dive right in here. AMN Healthcare is the nation's largest healthcare staffing firm, according to reports by SIA, or Staffing Industry Analysts, as we know. You, Susan, were employee number 19. Now, fast forward, you're sitting at over $2 billion in annual revenue and nearly 3,000 employees. So again, number 19 up to 3,000. And I've known you over the years, but you've made just about every list there is in the staffing industry, including Staffing Industry Analyst Hall of Fame and Global Power 150 Women in Staffing. Not only have you been recognized by our industry, but the Dallas Business Journal and CEO Connection both honored you. And prior to CEO, you were SVP of Business Development, CFO, COO, and President. So quite a background here. And I'm sure there's even more awards that you have been given. But while you may be at the largest healthcare staffing firm, interestingly, not everyone who listens to our podcast, even those in staffing, are always familiar with the different sectors within our industry. So I'd love it if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about the company.
Absolutely, Leslie. And one of my, of course, favorite topics always to talk about, because AMN has just been such an integral part of my life, and I'm so incredibly proud of the team. So we are, as you said, the largest healthcare staffing firm in the U.S., actually worldwide, but our market truly is focused primarily in the U.S. But over the years, we've also evolved into becoming the largest workforce solutions, or now more known as a total talent solution partner within healthcare. And that means that we provide a variety of solutions that help our clients recruit, onboard, optimize, and in some cases, plan for their workforce, whether it be permanent or temporary. So we're the largest provider of solutions such as managed services programs, VMS. We provide predictive analytics and scheduling. More recently, we've gone into telehealth with a telehealth platform for schools, providing speech therapy services. And then our largest acquisition, which was earlier this year, into the video interpretation services within healthcare. We bought the largest provider in that space, Stratus Video, which has just been a phenomenal addition. So, you know, if you think about our evolution as an organization, we started as a travel nurse organization. That's still our largest business, and we absolutely love the opportunity to be a provider of quality nurses where they're needed most. But we've expanded into other healthcare disciplines, ranging from physicians to allied healthcare leaders, as well as these technology services or technology-enabled workforce solutions such as Stratus. So it's been quite an evolution over the last three decades, and as proud as I am of the team and what we've been able to create for our clients and clinicians, I'm even more excited about the future because there's so much more we can and need to do.
You've made quite a bit of progress over those years. It's unbelievable when you listen to hearing what you say about the different aspects of growth and elements through acquisition and so forth. But something that you said really stood out to me, and that's really the investment you've made in technology as well within the healthcare sector and just the different lines of business and so forth. But really, when you think about it, Susan, something that you pride yourself in as the company is really being a leader as it relates to innovation in healthcare. healthcare workforce solutions. And the story you just shared really kind of speaks to that when it comes to innovation, whether that be through acquisition or the different services that you've built out. And you have said that the company has no fear of changing and growing to meet the needs of your clients. And that in fact, you constantly evolve and recreate yourselves, and you feel like that is really essential to the company. So I'm curious to hear from you, because healthcare and staffing and technology all coming together, what does being innovative mean to you? And then how has that shifted, if at all, as a result of COVID, which obviously being in healthcare is pretty significant?
Yeah, it certainly has had an impact. And with all the negative impacts of the pandemic, there actually have been some positive silver linings, if you will, regarding the need to drive innovation that much faster. But going back to the original question, you know, for us, innovation has been a necessity to make sure that we continue to evolve with the changing needs of our clients within healthcare. Certainly, technology and the delivery of healthcare has changed a lot over the last three decades, and the workforce needs have changed a lot. And so we've really paid close attention to making sure we're listening to our clients. And that includes both healthcare organizations and our candidates, which are clinicians, leaders, and other kinds of talent within the healthcare environment. And so making sure that we are listening first and foremost to what do they need from us, not just now, but 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And sometimes it's even difficult for them to articulate exactly what they need. And yet we know that we need to be continuing to make investments to provide services that are going to help them reach their goals. So sometimes it's easier not to say, what do you need us to do? But rather, what are your goals? And how do we make sure that we align with that? Certainly providing quality care is always an essential goal, but also driving efficiency and reducing costs is always critical. Having technology that can help them get better analytics so that they understand how their workforce is performing and what, where, and how they have workforce needs now and into the future has been important. And so let me just back up one more thing, is also adopting best practices from other industries. So things like managed services programs and vendor management systems, recruitment process outsourcing, scheduling. These are not new innovative ideas that we developed, but we did bring them into healthcare because healthcare has been traditionally a later adopter of some of these technologies and outsourced solutions. So we were hearing this from our clients about a decade ago and realized we needed to be at the forefront of providing those solutions to be the right kind of partner for them as they continue to evolve. You think about a large healthcare system, just as an example, you know, it used to be most hospitals were standalone, or maybe there was a 4 or 5 hospital system. Now you have mega systems like the Kaisers of the world and Tenants and HCA. And not only do they have more hospitals, they're more vertically and horizontally integrated. And in some cases, they're even partnering with, or in some cases, being acquired by payers. And so it's really important that we think about those solutions that are going to help them create the systemness and enterprise view that they want and need. Now, one problem, it used to be a problem, we thought, with innovation is we have to be ready to fail. We have to be ready to not be great at what we do out of the gates. So part of the evolution of our innovative culture has been that willingness to make investments in solutions that might not be exactly right the first round. And so we have to be willing to learn from the feedback that we're getting from our clients and quickly adjust and continue to invest in those solutions. So innovation is something that has been a core part of who we are and how we've evolved, but I have to say we can and must always get better at it as well. And some of that is that willingness to fail a little bit more frequently, at least on the smaller things. We don't want to fail at anything big, but at least early on when we're rolling out a new solution, we have to be willing to have an iterative process.
Well, a couple of things you said, Susan, that really stand out to me. One, listening to your clients and really meeting them at their need. But two, looking outside of the industry. And it fascinates me when I talk to CEOs or founders of companies who are struggling a little bit and aren't sure why they aren't growing. And I think to myself, well, and often will say to them directly, being an advisor and so forth, say it moments sometimes where sometimes you have to do that. You have to look inside the industry, understand your competitive landscape, what's happening, and actually have conversations with your peers, but also look outside of the industry to see what innovations are happening, what is important to your clients, and ask those questions. Too often, it seems like people make an assumption that, well, we work with clients day in and day out. Of course, we know what their needs are. Well, have you asked them specifically what they are? You can't always assume just based on your interactions that you know that. So clearly, you're doing something right. Your company has built a great reputation, and especially, you know, if you just look at numbers in and of itself, how much you've grown. And then, of course, being willing and ready to fail, the willing piece, knowing that, you know, you're not always going to make the right decision the first time, but you're taking that risk and that chance to do it, and that you're ready to pivot and change as you need to is critical.
You are so right, Leslie. And this is why you and your team are such great advisors, because you get that. There's the what is it that we want to do, but then what is the behavior and the culture within the organization and the willingness to embrace change, embrace innovation. I sometimes say to my team, you know, if we're scared of something disrupting the industry, that means we likely need to embrace it. And we need to make sure that we're moving towards that disruption, or better yet, we are the disruption and we're a part of what's going to continue to elevate and innovate within our industry. And we weren't always that way, I have to admit. You know, we were in fact fearful when the managed services program model came to healthcare. We thought, oh, it might not be good for us, or it might not be good for the industry. And we quickly realized it's good for clients and it's what they want. So we better get on board. And that's when we made one of our larger acquisitions in 2010, the MedFinders organization that already had a great infrastructure and platform for providing MSP, and we decided we were going to lead the charge within MSP as opposed to wait and see how it worked out. And I'm so glad that we ran towards that change and embraced it and invested in it rather than sit back and wait.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, even as of late and thinking ahead, not even that far around the corner to December and next year, I'm never fully comfortable. Even on our best days, I'm still like, okay, wait, what could happen? And thinking about what those action plans are. So that being okay, you have to feel uncomfortable sometimes. And oftentimes you're right. That is a signal that you're doing something right. So not to be complacent with that. Susan, interestingly, okay, so we've talked about this a little bit. You've been with AMN Healthcare for over 30 years. And the interesting thing about this is that you almost left the company twice. The first time was moving from San Diego to Maine to actually start a family. And the second time was due to a changing culture. That said, and I really give you a lot of credit here, Susan, because oftentimes people leave without saying something, and in particular, women often are known for doing this. But that did not happen with you. You were very open and very vocal about your wants and needs, and twice felt like leaving was the best option. But you didn't just leave, you said something. So perhaps share one of your stories and how having someone really look out for you and meet you at your personal and professional needs made all the difference, and why you are doing the same for those rising up in your company.
Yeah, and these were two very impactful times in my life, not only because they kept me with the organization, but they really taught me what it means for the company to help achieve individual, personal, and professional goals. And the reality is they're always very intertwined. And for me, the first one that you mentioned was when my husband and I wanted to start a family. We were living in San Diego, and we just felt that moving to a different place and having perhaps more flexibility would give us that opportunity. And so we made the decision that we wanted to move from San Diego to Maine, literally on an island, a fishing island. Ironically, I just went back there and visited this last week with my daughter, which was such a wonderful experience. But when we made the decision, I came to the company's leadership at the time and said, I want to make this move. And I realized I was CFO at the time and had taken taken on marketing and a lot of different operations, and I couldn't carry on those same responsibilities living literally as far as you could get across the country. And I wanted to go part-time. And so fortunately for me, the company agreed that I could make that move and continue working actually in a new capacity, which made it even better because I got to learn and do new and different things. And so when I moved to Maine, I became our head of client services for the Northeast, which basically meant I was out selling to and interfacing with hospital clients. And that was such a tremendous learning experience. There is nothing that quite matches sitting in front of the client, walking the halls of the hospital with them, and getting as close as you can to what they're trying to achieve every day and the impact that we make. The second thing that I did was worked on our first acquisition back in 1998 of Medical Express, which was the first of 25 acquisitions that we've made over those years. And so I was able to do those things working from my home in Maine. This is, of course, well before we had Wi-Fi and such great technology. And I was also able to achieve my personal goals. And we adopted our first two children from Russia at the time and brought them back to our little home on Bailey Island. And I thought, this is it. I've achieved some of the most important things I wanted to achieve in my life. But my journey took me then to Colorado. After we made that acquisition of Medical Express, I realized we needed to integrate the organizations. We didn't even know what that meant back then, but we knew we probably needed some boots on the ground. And so I picked up my newly minted family with two kids who could barely speak English, and we went to Colorado, which was supposed to be for 6 months, and we were going to come back to Maine. Always the plan was to go back to Maine and continue on, but I was asked to come back to San Diego and take on a bigger and broader role. And my family and I decided that we would make that move. So I came full circle, you know, went to Maine, spent 5 phenomenal years there, and was able to achieve something incredibly important to me personally, but then ended up coming back full circle. So it really taught me the importance of meeting our team members where they are in life. And I call it the journey of life. And we go through different phases. We always have personal and professional goals. And at any given time, one of those may take a little bit more of a front seat and a priority. And if the company can work with our colleagues during those times, some of them are exciting times for them, positive times. Some of them are difficult times, whether it be a health crisis or a family situation. If we can work with them to be flexible, it's the right thing to do, number one, but I think it engenders tremendous loyalty and it builds upon the values of our culture.
I almost feel like you're describing the culture of our company. One of our values is inspire loyalty, and a big piece of it is making sure that we're meeting our team at their need. And in fact, hearing your story, I actually had a conversation with someone on our team this week who is actually going to go part-time and find her passion for doing what she loves to do professionally and also loving being a mom, and that it's okay to want to do both. It's more than okay to want to do both. And to give them that opportunity and flexibility to be able to make those choices is really special. And I definitely don't take it for granted whatsoever, knowing my own, you know, personal life and situation is different than many others. And I really respect that, Susan. You all did that before flexibility, before COVID. This was obviously thread throughout the DNA of the culture of your company, in particular, the person before you taking leadership, giving you that opportunity, and you're now paying it forward for others on your team. It speaks volumes to who you are as a person, as a leader, to be able to offer that. And for them to see that you're not just saying it, you're actually living and breathing that, which are really two very distinctly different things. And it's so important as you're onboarding people for them to see that and understand that. And that whole inspire loyalty, you being able to offer that to them will inspire years of loyalty in your team, as you have seen really firsthand. And quite frankly, saved you you from leaving the company. And imagine, you know, if you weren't there working on those acquisitions or working on the customer service in the local market, you know, you may not be where you or the company are today. So kudos to whoever that was who gave you that opportunity. So we'll unpack some of that and some questions coming up. But you mentioned in the past that your family made sacrifices as you moved around the country, going where the company needed you. What did you struggle with on that journey? And what type of advice do you have for women, whether they are planning a family or, you know, have one and have an eye on the C-suite? Anything you would have done differently?
Well, I don't have anything so significant that I would call it a regret. I've been very fortunate to have, you know, an incredible growing family, and they've been very supportive of me. It's not been easy. And as I mentioned, I was with my 27-year-old daughter last week, and we had such a phenomenal mother-daughter week. But when she was growing up, it was difficult because I was the one working longer hours, and we were typically moving and adjusting our family because of my work and my commitment to AMN. And as flexible as they were, I know that created its own challenges as well. It's funny to listen to my daughter now. She talks about it as being positive experiences. I was very worried about it when she was growing up and thinking about, you know, moving schools or this or that. And now she talks about it all as great learning experience. And I think, you know, quite honestly, as a female, particularly for my daughter, but also for my sons, it showed them that you can pursue your passion for making an impact through your work and your passion for your family. It's not always going to be perfect. I mean, to say it succinctly, you can have it all, but it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be a juggling act going on, and you're always going to wish you were doing a little more here and a little more there, but you do the best that you can. And in the midst of all of that, you also have to remember to take care of yourself physically, mentally, and it's very difficult to do when your time is committed and you want it to be committed to your family and to your colleagues and to the mission of your work overall. But if you let your own health deteriorate because you're not paying attention, then that can be a problem as well. So I guess, you know, you ask, is there anything that I would do differently? You know, probably I would have gotten more involved in community work earlier on. I've realized later in my life and career our responsibility to help those around us. Now, AMN is well known for our community impact and volunteer work and philanthropy. And I take great pride in personally being involved and on the ground with our team members through all of that. But it wasn't that way 20 years ago. We weren't as involved. I wasn't as involved. And I wish I would have gotten more involved because we only have so many years on this planet. And I've learned that we can make a more significant impact outside of our family, outside of our business, if we help people around us in our communities nationwide. You know, we go down to Guatemala as an organization. My husband and I have gone every single year on the week-long mission trip that we do. I wish I would have started that 20 years ago. I feel like I lost out on the ability to make that kind of impact earlier on. But again, you do the best you can. You're juggling your children, your family, your work, your parents, all of these things. So I'm not sure where I would have fit it in, but I wish I would have figured it out.
Well, half the things we do today, Susan, weren't around early on in even my career. I had my mom sit in on one of, I think you know, I co-founded ARA. It's Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And we have over 6,000 people part of the program across the U.S. And my mom sat in on one of the sessions, and she actually heard Teresa Carroll, who you probably know in our industry, speaking to our group about how women rise. And we got off the meeting. It was a virtual webinar via Zoom. And my mom said, oh my gosh, she was taking notes. You know, she hasn't worked in years, but she's like, gosh, I really wish that we would have had something like this in my career. And my mom was a CEO of multiple credit unions, and she just didn't have that kind of support and the women's groups kind of coming together and people coming together to help each other and network in a way like this. So to your point, At least we're doing it now. So I'm happy that we're bringing people together. And quite frankly, even this conversation, you know, a lot of people listen to it and it really helps them feel like they're not alone in certain things. And another point I just wanted to make was I was interviewing Ursula Williams from SIA for this podcast, who you know well. And I actually interviewed her daughter as a surprise to Ursula, because I kept hearing in these interviews this pain as parents of, you know, we're working all the time and the sacrifice is made and it's so hard and it's not perfect. And her daughter, who is like Ursula's biggest fan, was just like, listen, my mom was there when I needed her and that's what mattered most to me. And she said, you need to unapologetically be a working mom and be the best that you can be and forgive yourself, because your children, you know, while there may be moments that you remember as being painful, the kids don't really remember a lot of these things. So, you know, as long as you're there for the important things and they know that they're loved, most importantly, that can really make a difference. So I enjoy asking these questions just as a mom of a four-year-old and a CEO and involved in a lot of different things. It helps me remain in that perspective and in that present mind and moment too. So thank you for sharing that. So Susan, we often talk about the topic of mentoring and how women raise their hand and say that they'd like a mentor, but they aren't always sure about how to go about it. I'd be really curious to hear from you, if you wouldn't mind sharing, because a lot of times women just even lack the confidence to ask someone. I just had a chat with someone earlier today and sent probably 5 different resources over for a founder, CEO, of ways that they can reach out to different people and give suggestions. So tell us about the influence of your personal board of directors and why you believe having a mentor is important, but also having sponsors are even better.
Yes, my personal board of directors has been absolutely essential to, you know, my ability to stay sane, but also to continue to grow and accomplish the things I want to accomplish. And so for me, a personal board of directors are, you know, individuals, both professional and personal, that can help be there as both a mentor, an advisor, a sounding board, and a sponsor, which is someone who will more actively open doors for you and be your advocate. This personal board of directors has your best interest at heart. They don't have otherwise a horse in the race that will perhaps influence what they say or don't say. So, you know, for me, it's individuals such as my mom, my husband, our chairman, Doug Wheat, and others that have been very influential in my life. One of them in particular, Doug Wheat, was very instrumental in encouraging me to continue to pursue more opportunities within AMN, and eventually was a big advocate for me to become CEO of the company. But he also was the one that recommended me to the Playtex board of directors before AMN went public and before I had any board experience. I was shocked when he called me, and, you know, I thought, okay, I'm doing a good job on, you know, and, you know, just think you're kind of just trying to make things happen within your organization. But he took notice of that and believed I could be a great independent director for another organization. I wouldn't have gotten that opportunity had I not had such a great sponsor in Doug Wheat, because he believed in me, he believed in my future and what more I could do, and he advocated for me on that position. So I've really taken that to heart and work very hard to make sure that I am doing the same thing for colleagues and even individuals outside of AMN that are within our industry, or this, you know, friends and people I meet throughout my network, because I think that's our responsibility, is to help others to achieve their personal professional goals. And, you know, it takes time, it takes getting to know that individual, truly understanding what their goals are personally, professionally, what their strengths are, so that you can more proactively and with confidence advocate for them. It's not just sending an email and saying, hey, I want to introduce you to this person. It means you are reaching out, making phone calls, and you know the reasons why this individual is the right person to be considered for a role, whether it be a new job, a board position, whatever it may be. And I think women in particular need to make sure that they've got active sponsors that will advocate for them and put that kind of time into helping them pursue their goals.
I'm so happy you mentioned the piece about having a sponsor help you get on boards as well, because it is critical. You have to put yourself out there, building that network, making those connections. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. And I do feel like people think it's overwhelming and my gosh, I don't have time to do my job plus be with my family. But taking small steps to get involved, even just in industry organizations. I know my first private board was someone sponsoring me getting in. They just happened to mention my name and then the company reached out and it worked out really well, but you've got to get your name out there and put yourself out there a little bit to be able to do that and not just expect that it's going to come. And obviously your board member knew the work that you were doing and the value that you would add to that. So making yourself visible and putting yourself out there is pretty critical to that process as well. So with that, I want to ask you, so diversity, equity, and inclusion, it really isn't anything new to you. In fact, you've always played an active role in helping others achieve their personal and professional goals. And you really know how to use your voice for the value of diverse representation. You're a member of the Women Business Leaders and Women Corporate Directors Foundation. You really prioritized gender equality since joining AMN. So much so, Susan, in 2018 and 2019, the company was named to the Bloomberg Gender Equality Index and Human Rights Campaign Foundation Corporate Equality Index. You also personally joined more than 500 CEOs in pledging your commitment to diversity and inclusion within the workplace through the CEO Action and Diversity and Inclusion Project. I'm proud to say I'm one of those CEOs who stepped up to do it, and it's a big and important responsibility. And I have to ask you, when you look back, I mean, you're so fortunate with the company you were with. So perhaps it's maybe not even looking back on your career, but maybe seeing other women who you've surrounded yourself with inside and outside of work. But when you look at kind of rising through the ranks and things that this next generation coming up can take into consideration as women, not only in our industry, but just in business, that they can learn from some of the things that you've seen over the years, maybe name a couple of things that you've seen that you hope others will be able to take into consideration as they look at rising the ranks themselves.
Sure. So from a company standpoint, one of the things I wish would have been different is that companies would have been more flexible in enabling women to move in and out of the workforce based on their personal needs, whether it be raising children or taking care of aging parents or needing to physically move to another location. I have to say, even AMN wasn't as flexible as we probably should have been 20 years ago. And that's something that we've embraced more and more over the last decade. And we still have more that we can do. So I think that's a really important area. Again, the individual needs to make sure that they're also comfortable having that conversation, but for women to rise to the C-suite and board positions, we have to be able and willing to be flexible with their journey of life and the prioritization of personal and professional things going on for them. And if we do, we'll create that, you know, inspired loyalty that we talked about earlier. The next thing, you know, has been pay. And I think we've gotten better at this, although I think for many organizations, it's still a struggle. AMN has worked very hard to make sure that our female leaders and team members at all levels have equity in pay. And we don't just take for granted that it's that way, because we have, you know, 64% female and over half of our leaders are female. And that is including at the executive level. And even at the board level, we have 50% female representation, which is just unheard of. Most companies are striving to get to 20%. So in the numbers, we really represent well and show that AMN is a great place for women to build a career. But we want to make sure that as they move into those roles, that they're also paid in an equitable way. And so we make sure that we go through a testing of pay equity, both for gender equity, but also for other forms of diversity, to make sure that there's not some sort of unconscious bias or unintended consequence for people of color. And so we put our pay practices through a filter to look at gender outcomes, diversity outcomes, whether it be promotions happens during the year, merit increases, hiring practices, et cetera. We don't have, you know, quotas per se on our diversity metrics other than when it comes to pay, that we need to be equally and equitably paid. And so that's something I think that every company should be very attentive to. Fortunately, again, we've got a good track record, but you can't just assume it's happening. You have to measure it. And, you know, at the executive level, I have to say, sometimes it can be even harder. You think it would be easier as you move up through the ranks, but in some cases, you have unintentional outcomes from people rising through the ranks in organizations and then taking on a new leadership role. And for women, I believe it's been more of a problem, you know, for most companies where women have grown up within the organization. They step into a new role, a leadership role, and perhaps their pay isn't at the same level as their male counterparts in that same role. And you have to advocate for yourself. I know it's a difficult thing to do because you're maybe so excited and happy that you've been given that opportunity and that promotion, and you don't want to appear to be ungrateful. But if you don't advocate for it and your manager isn't advocating for you, then it's likely not going to get the attention that it needs. And there's always a respectful, positive way to advocate. You don't have to be demanding and negative about it, but I think shedding light is important. And I'm reminded of this when I was new into the CEO role and I was promoted and immediately paid less than the prior CEO. And I was fine with that because I was excited. I knew I was a new CEO and I assumed that that would change over time. And it actually took longer than I would have expected to change. But at one point it finally did and there was a correction made. And it was really, for me, very gratifying, not the monetary element of it, but the fact that I was then paid equal to the benchmarks. And then I started to slide back a little bit again, got a little bit, you know, out of skew with the benchmarks. And, you know, our information is all public, so anyone can see what those are. And it was not a problem for me, but then I think I told you the story. I was on a panel discussion about gender equality, and the question came up about pay. And the moderator asked me in front of the audience, "So Susan, I see AMN has outperformed your peers for the last 3 to 5 years, year after year, you've been north of the 75th percentile in performance of the company, and yet your pay is below the 50th percentile. I'm wondering why that is. Do you think it is because you're a woman?" And it was difficult for me to answer that because I didn't believe in my heart that that was the reason. But, you know, if you just sort of step back and look at the metrics, sometimes they're undeniable. So it was soon after that, I brought that up to our comp committee, and there were some adjustments made. And so I think sometimes you have to have the data and the metrics. You have to make sure that you are approaching it in the right way, but you do have to advocate for yourself or have others that will.
Well, I have to give you a lot of credit, Susan, for using your voice and standing up for yourself, because a lot of people would internalize that, not say anything, be angry, and not step up and be their own champion. So if there's just one lesson coming out of this for everyone listening, you have to be your own champion. You have to stand up for yourself and do what you know is right. And to your point, have the facts, have the data to back that up, because that will go a long way. And the results. So kudos to you on driving such a great organization. We are just about out of time, but I want to make sure I mention something. You mentioned a lot of the work that you and your husband do and AMN does in general. I just wanted to name the organization that you spend so much time doing, because I know just in pictures and articles I've read how much time you give to them, and for good reason. And that's the International Esperanza Project, IEP. I want to make sure I got that right. Is that the correct?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
And then just in reading about you, I've come to respect you so much over the years, and then getting to know you here too. Tell us real quickly, what turning point changed your life forever?
Two things. One, when I adopted my children, and that actually led to later my husband and I adopted three more young men. And so that's been an incredibly fulfilling experience for me. And then going down to Guatemala on the IEP trips has been life-changing and forever will be one of the most important things I can focus my time on.
By the way, these were set up as rapid fire questions, everyone. So, you know, that's why I'm saying answer these fast. They're important questions, okay. But I know they're so important to your life. I want to get them out. What's your favorite part about being a CEO? I'm really curious.
People I get to work with, they're amazing and inspiring every day.
Well, I know some of your team, and I will agree with you on that one. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
From my dad, break it down to cows, chickens, and taters, Susie. Keep it simple.
Those humble Nebraska roots. Love it. All right. I read a lot about you, so you have to tell me what's something that we'd be surprised to find out about you, even those who've worked with you for 30 plus years.
I love candy corn.
Ah, what is it about candy corn?
I know it's bad for you. It's disgusting, but I love it. It's sweet. It reminds me that it's fall and it's non-fat. I know it has calories, but it's non-fat. So I just love it.
It's not disgusting. I love candy corn too. All right. So thank you, Susan, so much for sharing your story and such great advice. I know I learned a lot coming out of this and just really appreciate your time. You've given us a lot to think about. If someone's listening to the podcast and they'd like to connect with you, how do you prefer to be reached?
LinkedIn would be great if they want to send me a message on LinkedIn. I love to connect.
Excellent. Terrific. Thank you, Susan, for saying yes when I asked you to speak with us today. And thank you to all of our listeners who joined us as well.
Very grateful for you, Leslie. Thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.